Blog Talk Radio.
Waka waka, bitch! How's everybody doing today? Oh, got an awesome show for you. Apparently, one of these corporatist Democrats decided to take a shower in corruption. Man, it's amazing to me that, like, anybody would consider voting for this loathsome son of a bitch. We're going to talk about that. Indiana Democrat Evan Bay. Wait until I tell you the record he racked up while he was not in the Senate. Remember, he retired, and then now he's like, oh, I'm going to run again because I care so much about the people. Well, I have some specifics on what he did in his off time. And also just an overwhelming fact on what percentage of politicians end up going through the revolving door. You know what that is? You go, okay, now I'm in Congress, now I'm doing all these things, and I'm not doing favors for anybody, for any corporations. What are you talking about? And then, oh, look at that, I retired, and now all of a sudden I'm working for these corporations and making millions of dollars. And then, oh, boy, look at that, now all of a sudden I'm back in Congress, and now I'm continuing to do the bidding of the corporations while I fuck over the people. Wait for that story. In fact, I'm going to leave with that one. Then, of course, Donald Trump was at a rally in North Carolina yesterday, and fucking A, did he cross a line again? We have another comment that's right up there with his comment against civilians in the Middle East. Remember when he said, well, we got to take out their families. We got to take out their families, talking about ISIS. So in other words, let's kill civilians on purpose. He made a comment that's right up there with that. It's not okay. So we'll talk about that. Also, we have Trump releasing his tax plan recently. I want to go through some of that with you. Some more poll numbers on Trump supporters. Who is the most popular political figure in the United States of America right now? I mean, the obvious answer is it would be me if I was included in the poll. But I wasn't. So I'll have to give you the other ones, and there's some interesting findings there. And Roger Ailes, Bucket of Lard Boy, as I call him, is in a whole heap of trouble. Wait until I give you the details of that. So let's get started here, and we'll kick it off with Democratic hack, corporatist shill, Evan Bay. Let's do it. So Evan Bay is a well-known corporatist establishment sellout Democrat. In fact, there's a good case to be made. He's the worst of the Democrats. Now, maybe there's a handful of blue dogs who are actually worse than him, but he makes Hillary Clinton look like Bernie Sanders. That's how much of a sellout he is, and he's just a comical human being. His lack of self-perception is unreal. It's off the charts. So this is a guy who was formerly in the Senate, then he retired, and he made this big thing about how, you know, this place has too much influence of big money. I'm going to go become a teacher because I want to make a difference that way, and I want to change people's lives for the better. So he leaves, and what does he do? Immediately goes and starts being a lobbyist and working for corporations and making millions of dollars. And then eventually, what does he say? Well, I want to get back in Congress. I want to go back to the Senate. That's what I want to do. What happened, big guy? Oh, I want to make a difference. I care about the kids. He's like, anyway, I want to bathe in money again, thank you very much, so I want to go ahead and go right back to the Senate. So, Huffington Post has an article out, I was reading it yesterday, I'm going to present it to you guys here. It's titled, Evan Bay has made millions off corporate boards since leaving the Senate. And that indeed is true. So let me go ahead and give you some of the details here. They say, when Indiana Democrat Evan Bay, who was running for his old Senate seat, left Congress in 2011, He cited dysfunction, gridlock, and the outsized influence of entrenched special interests on lawmakers. He even floated returning to Indiana to teach, as I was explaining, telling Ezra Klein he felt he could make a bigger difference in that capacity. Since leaving Capitol Hill, Bai has cultivated a very lucrative second career in serving on corporate boards. He earned nearly $4 million over the last 5 years. Since 2011, Bai has served on the board of directors at five corporations: McGraw-Hill Education, Marathon Petroleum, Berry Plastics Group, and Fifth Third Bancorp. Never heard of that one. And RLJ Lodging Trust. According to SEC filings from four of these companies, Bai pocketed the following amounts in cash and stock awards from 2011 through 2015. $1.35 million from Marathon Petroleum, about $1 million from Fifth Third Bancorp, $827,000 from RLJ Lodging Trust, and $645,000 from Berry Plastics Group. So, they continue here and explain the following. This is Evan Bai and the amount of money he took from corporations. I'm not sure if when he gets back in the Senate, if he's going to do favors for said corporations. This is a real hard thing to figure out here. But they say this about politicians more generally. Quote, of course, Bai is not alone in pursuing board appointments after leaving office. 45% of senators who left Capitol Hill from 1992 to 2015 ended up on boards, according to a Washington Post report released last year. 45% go through the revolving door. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with that terminology, basically what it means is you run for office. When you're running for office, who raises money for you, who does favors for you? Obviously, wealthy donors, corporations, they'll contribute to your super PAC, to your campaign, through all the different avenues that they possibly can. This way, when you're in power, what happens? They want you to do some favors for them. Now, they would never come out and say, there's no quid pro quo, I would like you to do X for me. It's subtle, and it's nudging you in this direction or that direction. You know, there may be something coming up about a corporate welfare check that they can get, a subsidy. Doesn't it sound so much more lovely when you call it a subsidy as opposed to a welfare check, which is what it is? It might be something about stashing money in the Cayman Islands, you know, being able to keep your money offshore. It might be something that's just some sort of a tax break, another kind of tax break that specifically applies to certain industries. You know, when they give you money, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. So they give you the money, you do the favors, and then the system just keeps going round and round and round. Now, what happens is many of these politicians go, eventually, I'm sick of this shit, being in the Senate or being in the House, and, it's taxing, it's not very rewarding, I want to go ahead and retire. Then what happens? They leave making their salary, which is about $200,000, and then they go and they make $1 million a year, $2 million a year, whatever it may be, working as a lobbyist for one of these corporations that bought them off. So they know, hey, when this person was in power, they did favors for me. Now it's my turn to return the favor. And, oh, you want a job? Well, you have influence in Washington. You could be a lobbyist. You can be the person to try to connect the dots for us and try to get these corrupt backroom deals. And that's what ends up happening. So you have people going back and forth between working to represent the people as a politician. They don't give a fuck about the people or the constituents. Then they go, okay, I'm going to go and work as a lobbyist, or sometimes because of certain rules, they have to change their title while they work as a lobbyist, but they just pretend they're something else. And then eventually some of them get tired of that, and they go, you know what, I'm going to go back into the Senate or the House. And then they raise money again, and the system it goes round and round and round and round and round, and the entire time all they're doing is looking out. It's a circle jerk of money and power. They're just looking out for the people who gave them the money. And by the way, I'm not saying that they're bad people for doing this. This is a problem with the incentive structure within the system. It turns out if somebody gives you whatever it happens to be, $30,000 for your campaign, you kind of like them. And you're going to answer that phone call. You're going to take that phone call. Because that's what happens when somebody gives you $30,000. You tend to like the person. So it doesn't mean they're bad people. It just means you have to change the rules to make it so that that's not a thing. It can't be possible for, private interest to give you this money, because then obviously you're going to return the favor. So if we had a system of clean elections, well, then what happens? The public funds the campaign, and then who are you more likely to look out for? The public! It turns out you'll look out for the for the regular people and the constituents when it's tax money funding you, so that the incentives are now lined up properly for you to give a shit about expanding Medicare, expanding Medicaid, doing the right thing for the people and not for the corporations and private interests. So Evan Bayh is the worst of the worst when it comes to this stuff. The worst of the worst. He's a guy who's so brazen in his corruption. And, you know, we've covered previous stories. When we learned that Evan Bayh was running again, I gave you even more specifics about the legislation that he pushed for example, that was to appease his donors and to help them out because they paid for him. And then now we have even more specifics. And by the way, let me be clear about something. I'm not against somebody making, like they say, whatever it was, he made $5 million through 4 years or something like that. Oh, $4 million over the last 5 years. I'm not against that in principle. Like oftentimes, you know, people smear the left with they're against people even getting rich. No, we're not. You can get rich. There's no problem with that. The question is how you do it. And are you doing it in a way that is corrupt? So if you're supposed to represent the public interest and the public good, but you're not doing that, instead you're taking private money and you're representing the private interest and snubbing the people and the constituents when that's supposed to be your job is to represent them, that's the problem. I'm not mad at a doctor. You know, I'm not mad at, you know, the CEO of some wildly successful corporation that makes $4 million over 5 years and does it by actually working hard and selling a good product and playing by the rules. But the thing is, the rules in this respect are so perverted that the spirit of what they're doing is dead wrong, which is why we need to change the rules and the laws and make it so that we have clean elections. And until we get to that point, there's going to be a million more Evan Bayhs. Evan Bayh will be the entire Democratic Party at some point if we don't get the money out of the system. Okay. Now, we continue and go to Donald Trump and him shoving his foot in his mouth. Get my video here. Donald Trump was at a rally in North Carolina yesterday, and oh boy, did he cross a line when he said this.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But
wow. Dude, don't say that. 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 What are you doing? What are you doing, man? He can't help himself. Like, he talks off the cuff, which is something that, in some respects, people look at and go, oh, that's better. Like, that's not your standard robotic politician. Yeah, but he's also, let's face it, kind of an idiot, and he has no filter, and he says shit like that, and he doesn't realize the potential consequences of it. This is, to me, this is right up there with the comment that he made on Fox and Friends when he said, we have to take out their families. We have to take out their families, talking about killing civilians in the Middle East, just flat out advocating for murdering civilians. Don, we have a word for that. It's called terrorism. So this is why I started a long time ago, hashtag terrorist Don, because he's saying, I want to be a terrorist. So, and that's a fair characterization. His words, not mine. We have to take out their families. We have to take out their families. That's what they do. That's one of the reasons they're so bad, is that they want to take out families. But you say you want to do the exact same thing. Now, I mean, look, there's... Is there any other interpretation of what he's saying? You know, oh, there's nothing you could do if she starts picking liberal justices. Well, I guess maybe the Second Amendment people, there's something you could do. Is there any other interpretation of that? I mean, maybe he means the Second Amendment people can rush to the voting booths and in overwhelming numbers and make sure she doesn't win. Is that, no, that's, I'm trying here, Don, but I can't think of anything else. This, obviously, Second Amendment people, guns. Yeah, there's nothing you could do if she starts appointing these terrible liberal activist judges. Well, you know, maybe the Second Amendment people, there's something you could do. What would that be, Don? What would that be? Want to spell it out in you know, direct terms here? What does that mean? You know what it means. It means, you know, the tree of liberty must be, you know, washed with the blood of tyrants, or whatever the quote is that crowd likes to talk about. It means, yes, guns, assassination, killing. You know, oh, but hey, look, I was vague about it, and I was witty about it, and I didn't say, you should kill Hillary Clinton. So therefore, I didn't say anything wrong. I don't know what you mean. No, this isn't funny, dude. This isn't funny. We already know. We covered the stories. Some insane percentage of Donald Trump supporters believe Hillary Clinton is demonic. They think she's demonic. So if you have your rabid base of supporters, they're not that bright. The people who think Trump has never said or done anything wrong, they're not that bright. And then all of a sudden you're dropping hints like, well, you know, maybe the course of action if this doesn't go our way is violence. You're setting the table for something horrible to happen here, man. You really are. Now, look, I don't know his intentions. Are his intentions like, no, seriously, I want somebody to kill her? Or is he just being Donald Trump and he's not that bright and he's stumbling along in a speech and he throws out this sideline that he didn't even stop and think about and go through his silly head? And it just, he like later on he realizes, oh shit, that might be interpreted as violent. I don't know, and I don't want to get into that. But bottom line is, dude, you can't say that. You're running for fucking president, man. There's some lines you don't cross. The lines, I mean, and he's crossed almost all of them. Like, for example, and this is even a difference between the fucking neocons and Donald Trump, in that the neocons, as they tortured, they weren't stupid enough to say, we are pro-torture. They said, it's enhanced interrogation. Because they know, hey, if you say torture, then we're looking in that mirror. We're looking into the abyss. And at some point, even in the dumbass minds of the neocons, they go, oh, whoa, 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 what are we doing here? We're copying the tactics of the bad guys? Well, then maybe wouldn't that make us bad guys? But they were smart enough to know, you don't say we're going to fucking torture, because that makes you a bad person. So, no, enhanced interrogation, and they rationalize it to themselves so they can sleep at night. Donald Trump is the guy who comes along, he drops all the coded language in every respect, and he's like, I want to torture. I want to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. Not only do I want to do waterboarding, I want to do worse than waterboarding. The Geneva Conventions, you know what? They're the problem. That's the problem. I want to update it. What do you mean you want to update it, Don? It's in the Geneva Conventions, it says shit like, don't kill civilians. Yeah, I want to update it. So what do you want? You want to kill civilians? That's how you want to update it? How do you want to update it? What the fuck does that mean? Yeah, we got to take out their families. We got to do it. That's what we got to do. We got to take out their families. Look at what's happening, man. And look, one of the arguments against Trump that I don't think people talk about enough, in fact, I honestly haven't heard anybody bring it up except for me, is that here you have a guy who is telling you some of the grotesque things that he plans on doing. Do you have any idea how history will judge us if we elect Donald Trump, he does the things that he says he plans on doing, kill civilians, torture, totally disregard the Geneva Conventions and update it, in other words, make it worse. If he actually goes on to do these things, well, then history looks back and they go, holy shit, how depraved were the American people for picking this son of a bitch when he said he was going to do all of these war crimes? He said it. George W. Bush, he ended up doing the war crimes, but he ran as a compassionate conservative. You guys probably don't remember this. Literally, that was his platform. I'm a compassionate conservative. I'm not like these other conservatives that are, you know, they're too hardline and they're too right-wing. No, we're conservatives who believe in compassion. So we're like, you know, moderate. This was his line of argument. Now, obviously, when he was in power, him and Dick Cheney, they were anything but moderate. They were anything but compassionate. But the point is, people voted for them because that's how they portrayed themselves. Donald Trump has dropped any act. He's just like, you know what? I'm a loathsome son of a bitch. I want to kill civilians. I want to torture. I want to say out loud, fuck the Geneva Conventions. I don't give a fuck about rule of law, even though ironically half the time he screams, I'm the law and order candidate. And now he's talking about making jokes, and I don't even know if it's really a joke, seems kind of like a side comment, where, you know, like, maybe the Second Amendment people take care of Hillary Clinton. Look, I know any time you bring this up, this person, this word, people go, oh, don't bring that up, because it's never an apt analogy or comparison. Well, that's not true. Sometimes it is apt, and sometimes it does make sense to invoke this. Hitler got elected, for those of you who don't know, with a plurality of the vote in Germany, 43% of the vote he got. When he was running, he wasn't saying, I'm going to discriminate against the Jews, and I'm going to do a genocide, and I'm going to do a Holocaust, and he didn't lay out his fucking grotesque platform. Because even though people were mad, if he had laid it out in the specifics, that which is what he actually ended up doing, people would have went, whoa, that's too far, dude. That's not to say there was no anti-Semitism in Germany. Of course there was. But the anti-Semitism was maybe of the level like, oh, you know, we want to kick them out of here, and they're controlling the economy, and they're horrible. If he had said, I want to kill all of them, if he had said, we have to take out their families, people would have went, whoa. So even Hitler was more disguised in when he ran, what he wanted to do. Later on, you talk to people, they say, I had no idea he was going to go that far. I had no idea. Well, Donald Trump is telling you up front, I'm going to go that far. I'm going to say, let's kill family members. Let's kill family members. We have to take out their families. Let's torture. I want to torture. We have to torture. Geneva Convention, Schmeneva Flinchens. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck about that. Hillary Clinton, Second Amendment people, maybe they'll have to take care of her. Dude, he's telling you all these things up front. How the fuck is history going to judge that if we say that I'm signing on to that? And you know what the other incredibly sad aspect of this is? Donald Trump could have never came about if our process was functioning properly. And this is where I lose a lot of people, and they say, oh, well, now this isn't right, Kyle. Why would you go down this path? No, but it's true. If it wasn't for the abject failure of the political establishment in the United States, Donald Trump could never have become as popular as he's become. Because it's the xenophobia and the bigotry and the disgusting comments mixed in with the economic populism. So here he is saying TPP is bad, corruption's bad, all these economically populist things. And he mixes that in with his xenophobia and his bigotry, and that message is a potent message when you have the other candidates, certainly Hillary Clinton, not being all that economically populist, certainly not in a convincing way. And outside of that, obviously being better on social issues with her rhetoric, you know, not saying we should deport all undocumented immigrants or ban all Muslims or fucking, you know, take out their families and shit like that. But it's the economic populism which opened the door. And as I've said before, if you don't get a Donald Trump now, there's going to be another Donald Trump unless the establishment starts actually representing the will of the people and starts helping the people. I mean, middle-class wages, for example, have been stagnant since the 1980s. People feel like there's no hope and there's no way to get ahead now in this economy. And when they feel like that and they're just fucking treading water and they're not moving forward, it becomes easy to scapegoat, and that starts to resonate. So all you need is somebody to come along and say, blame the Mexicans, blame the Muslims, blame the minorities. All these people are bad. Blame, you know, let's fucking take out their families. Let's do all these horrific things. But they sprinkle that in with, oh, but TPP, bad. Corruption, bad. And then a lot of people in the country go, yes. So there's a lot of blame to go around here. Obviously, first and foremost, you blame Donald Trump for saying the disgusting things he's saying, and his supporters for standing by him, even though he goes as far as to say these things. But then, yes, there also is some blame to go around for the establishment because they're so immensely disconnected from the people that they open the door for a terrible populist demagogue to come in and say, I'll make it all better. So this is disgusting. This is grotesque. Dude, Donald, you got to stop, man. This isn't funny. This isn't cute. There are some genuinely unbalanced people out there who are your followers, who hear you say something like, maybe the Second Amendment people will take care of Hillary Clinton. And some percentage of them, I don't know if they'll act on it or not, but some percentage of them will go, yeah, they should. So that's where we're at now. Openly hoping for the murder of candidates in the United States of America, in a democracy. We're inching closer and closer to that second world, third world level thing here. I mean, for all the problems that America has, and we talk about it all the time, the transfer of power back and forth between the political parties over an extended period of time, you know, that's the stability has been something that's fantastic. I mean, who would want to see a violent coup, revolution, whatever the fuck you call it, every 4 years, every 8 years in America, nothing would be, business could not continue. You know, we would just be an unstable place. There'd be all these problems that flow from that. But now it's like he's knocking on the door of that. He's knocking on the door of like, yeah, forget all the rules. All the rules. You know, like I said, let's take out their families. Let's torture. Maybe the Second Amendment people will take care of Hillary Clinton. Pump your brakes, dude. This is way too far, and even you know it's way too far. All right, I got to take a break. When we come back, Trump releases tax plan. I'm going to go into some of that. And also, we have some unbelievable results here from a new public policy polling survey on Trump supporters. All right, stay right there. We'll be right back with that and a million other things, bitch. We're back. Donald Trump released his tax plan recently, and it's pretty light on specifics, but we can certainly ascertain the gist of it. So on trade, he's actually pretty solid. So he maintains that he's against the TPP and against NAFTA and all of these deals, which I think is good. But understand, me saying this is just going based off of what he's saying now, whereas Hillary Clinton actually brings up a good point when she says, oh, really? You're against these things? That's interesting. Then why do you have this product made in Turkey, this product made in Mexico, this product made in China, so on and so forth? You know, he personally has outsourced his jobs. And the idea that, like, what do you mean he has to do that? No, he doesn't have to do that. That is clear hypocrisy. He chose to outsource his jobs. He didn't have to. He chose to outsource them. So every time I bring this up, I often bring up Ron Paul, because Ron Paul, for example, so he's against Medicare and he's against Social Security, but, you know, he's up there in age now and he takes Medicare and Social Security. Now, some people on the left go, aha, ha, 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 we got you. Hypocrisy. I don't necessarily agree with that, because those are programs, they're earned benefit programs. So he paid into it his entire life and he's just getting back what he's owed. So he might be against the program, but it's almost like you're automatically enrolled in it. So you're going to, because it's the system that exists, it's just natural that you're going to benefit from it, even though you could be against it in principle. I don't think there's that much hypocrisy there. There is hypocrisy in what Trump is doing, because it's not the default position that you outsource your jobs. You have to choose to outsource your jobs. You could have shit made in fucking Indiana and Iowa, and you don't. You haven't made in Mexico and Turkey. So, that being said, his rhetoric on TPP, his rhetoric on NAFTA, and oftentimes his rhetoric on corruption is solid. So, at least in that respect, credit where credit is due, even though I don't fucking believe him. Same thing with Hillary Clinton. She's, oh, no, I'm totally against TPP. I don't fucking believe that. You lobbied for it 45 times before you came out against it in the primary because you're against Bernie Sanders, a liberal lion roaring up from your left and calling out all your bullshit. You're like, me? I hate TPP. I don't know what you're talking about, even though I pushed for it 45 times. Trump understands that that's a good populist argument that'll help him win the election, so he's using it. Oh, no, me? I'm totally against TPP. I'm totally against trade, too. I guarantee you Hillary and Trump would do a similar thing if they get elected, where Hillary would change a provision or two and go, oh, see, now I'm for it because I made TPP better. It's not like it used to be. Now it's better. My ass cheeks. I'm sure it'd be just as bad. And Donald Trump might just change the name completely and change a few provisions and go, it's not the Trans-Pacific Partnership anymore. It's the International Pacific Agreement. And now I'm for it because it's not TPP. Ah. So I think they'd both be for it when push comes to shove. But still, to this point, Trump's rhetoric on it is against. But then we have this. So PBS explains here, Trump's tax plan envisions three income tax brackets of 33%, 25%, and 12%. His original plan last fall topped out at 25% for the wealthiest earners. Okay, so that is comically stupid. Right now the top tax rate is about 39.5%. That's the top marginal rate. I should be specific about that, not the top rate, period. If you don't know the difference between marginal tax rates and regular tax rates, marginal rate basically means that everything above a certain number that you make is taxed at that higher number. So, for example, I think as of right now it's about $400,000 or $450,000, depending on if you're single or if you're married, but we don't need to get into all the details. Basically, the way that works is everything you make over $400,000 would be taxed at 39.5%. It's not that all of your money is taxed at 39.5%. So there's a big difference between marginal tax rates and just tax rates, and a lot of people don't know that, and a lot of cheap demagogues on the right make shit up as a result of that. Or maybe I'm being too harsh, and they don't make shit up. They're just massively ignorant as to how taxes work, so they operate off the assumption, which is dead wrong. You know, people used to say, oh, Bernie Sanders wants a 90% tax rate. What an idiot. What an idiot. Except he didn't want a 90% tax rate. His highest tax rate was 52%, not 90%. The 90% was utterly made up. And the 52% was for people who made over a certain number. I believe that number was about $1 million. So, and that's before you even include deductions. Deductions is a whole other thing, that door that you open up. And then that 52% rate is probably effectively like a 35% rate or something like that. So anyway, again, I'm getting too far off into the weeds here. But Trump's new numbers here are a disaster. So if he makes it the top tax bracket, 33%, that is a net gigantic tax cut that helps the rich. Under George W. Bush, the Bush tax cuts that blew a hole in the budget, it was 35%. And again, that's pre-deductions, but we don't need to get into that. Trump's is 33%. So the Bush tax cuts have led to gigantic debt and deficits, along with the Iraq War, of course, and the recession. But this partly led to the recession. Bush's rates were higher than Trump's. So he wants to give an even bigger tax cut to the rich. Disaster. Well, then he says 25% and 12% are the other two brackets. Whoa, hold on now. So your lowest bracket is 12%? Do you guys have any idea what that means? That means that under Trump's tax plan, even though he says he's for the average Joe, that would be a net gigantic tax increase on poor people. Because right now, so he wants three brackets. Right now there's seven, and we have a progressive system like every other modern nation, although ours tops out not nearly as high as other modern nations because they're more social democracies and we lean more towards the capitalist end of the spectrum than the socialist end of the spectrum. But as of right now, you know, you make not a lot of money. You pay very, very low in taxes. Well, Trump says, no, I want the bottom rate to be 12%. Well, then that's a gigantic net increase on the poor. See, this is the old Republican trick, guys. You have to focus on the specifics here. Because they say, oh, we're for the little guy. We're the party of tax cuts. We're for the average Joe. But then every time you go to their specifics in their plan, they will net increase taxes on the poor and oftentimes on the middle class, and they're only talking about cutting it for the rich. So it's a trick. They tell you, oh, I'm the party of cutting taxes. Just for the top 1% or 10% at most. Everybody else, you're admitting I want to increase taxes. Now, again, when push comes to shove, what'll he say? He'll just lie about it. Oh, what do you know? A lot of people will be paying nothing under me, and there's going to be, you know, another bracket underneath. Well, then why wasn't that in the plan? You're saying it to me now, but it wasn't in the actual plan. So what are you talking about? You want to increase taxes on the poor. That's what you want to do. That's what you want to do. Okay. Now, I'm not done yet. They continue. Trump also argued for cutting the top corporate tax rate to 15%, less than half what it is now. The Republican nominee also called for a freeze on new government regulation. All right, let's talk about how disastrous this is. So he says, well, you know, well, let's cut the top corporate tax rate. Okay, first of all, one of the talking points you'll often hear from the right is, we have one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world. Highest corporate tax rate in the world. Oh my God, it's so high, it's so high, it's so high. Why is that dead wrong? They're talking about the nominal rate. In other words, that's the rate that it is on paper. So they write down, oh, your rate is 30% or whatever. And people go, oh my God, that's so high. That's the nominal rate. That's not what you actually pay. The effective rate is what you pay. The effective rate in the U.S. is much lower, much lower. In fact, it's the second lowest in the modern world. But Trump comes along and he says, you know what? It's just too high, even though it's already the second lowest. Let's cut it more. I want it to be 15%. So again, this whole populist tap dance he does, oh, I'm for the little guy. Then why the fuck do you want to cut corporate taxes? Did you know corporate taxes used to make up a much bigger share of the net tax revenue the government received? And what would that do? That would take the tax burden off the shoulders of regular people because the corporations would pay a bigger chunk of it. Well, now, over the years, the corporate tax rate has been whittled, the effective rate has been whittled lower and lower and lower. And now who picks up the slack? Your average Joe. Trump says, no, I want to continue in that disastrous direction and have the corporations pay less and have the middle class pay more. Okay, a terrible idea, and the worst of all. A freeze on all new government regulation. That's so stupid, I don't even know where to begin breaking it down. So literally all new regulations. So there's not a single conceivable regulation that should be allowed to pass for a certain amount of time. All new government regulations. What happened, man, I thought, and remember, I covered the story and I gave credit too because credit was due at the time. The Republican platform, Trump's people push, oh, yeah, no, totally, we got to get Glass-Steagall back in there. Got to get Glass-Steagall back in there. Now, I said at the time, just because they're putting in the platform doesn't mean they're actually going to do it. You have to remember that this is the platform. It's not like the fucking members of Congress, it's not like representatives and senators will be like, oh, well, now it's in the platform that we have to be in favor of Glass-Steagall, so let's go ahead and push for that. No, they're going to look at it and go, yeah, we're in favor of it. And then just like the last few times it was brought up, like Elizabeth Warren brought it up once, Bernie Sanders brought it up again, a new version of Glass-Steagall, all the Republicans were against it, literally every single one. So they're still going to be against it, but it's just a way to say to the people, we are totally on your side on this issue. We are so populist now because of Donald Trump. But again, it's a trick. They're trying to say, oh, yeah, we're in favor of this stuff, but they're not. They're not actually going to push for it. Well, now the truth comes out, and what their actions will be come out. They might say every now and then, oh, I'm so populist on this issue or that issue, but he's telling you a freeze on all new government regulation. All new regulation. That would include Glass-Steagall. That would include you not wanting Glass-Steagall. He also wants to get rid of Dodd-Frank. Now, understand, Dodd-Frank is so disgustingly weak that it's totally ineffectual because you had Wall Street go back to doing many of the same things that got us into this mess in the first place. But because it's ineffectual and weak doesn't mean we're better off without it. There are some provisions in there that are actually very important. Trump wants to get rid of that. So he wants to deregulate Wall Street more and then freeze all new potential regulations, which would guarantee the next crash happens very, very soon. Now, I think the next crash is coming either way, no matter who wins the election. But Trump would speed it up. He's saying, oh, get rid of Dodd-Frank and freeze all new government regulations. How the fuck does that make any sense? Literally all new regulations? So what happens if there's some sort of environmental disaster and we know we need a new regulation and we know exactly the kind of regulation we need, and they go to President Trump, hey, Mr. President, look, here's the problem. We know this chemical that's leaking into the river. We have to fix it. This is the regulation we need. Nope, we froze all new government regulations, so by definition, a regulation is wrong. Hey, idiot, are there some issues where there's too much regulation? Of course there are. And even any liberal, any progressive would admit that. They'd say, yeah, duh, there are some regulations that are burdensome and unnecessary, and it's red tape. So you know what we do? We should try to get rid of the bad regulations. But we should also try to keep the good regulations, and when necessary, if we need a new regulation, of course we apply it. He says, no, we want a blanket rule against all new regulation. That is stupid on a level that I haven't seen stupid. That is a gargantuan achievement in the Stupidity Hall of Fame. That's a Guinness Book of World Record level stupidity. So he is a clown. Let's keep that in perspective. Every time he does some vague allusions to progressive ideas and policies, I'm against TPP, I'm against NAFTA, oh yeah, the corruption is so bad, as he's taking money from big donors too, by the way. Understand, man, it's Donald Trump. Look at his track record. The guy's a proven liar, time and time and time and time again. I mean, there's so many clear examples of it that it literally is comical. I laughed when the John Miller story, you remember that? There's fucking audio recording of Trump on the phone talking to magazines, telling them how great Trump is. And then later on, they present it to him, and he's like, that's not me. That's not me. I don't know what you're talking about. That's not me speaking. Dude, if we know your voice, it's fucking you on the phone. What are you talking about? It's not me. I don't know what you're talking about. It's not me. This is Donald Trump. He'll lie about anything. So don't fall for his fucking pseudo-populist tap dance. It's not real. Now, this isn't to say I'm not saying Hillary Clinton is good, because she's not. Her track record speaks for itself, too. It's a fucking dumpster fire, voting for the Iraq War, for the Patriot Act. She was in favor of NAFTA, was in favor of the TPP, was in favor of deregulation of Wall Street. So I'm not, in attacking Trump, I'm not saying Hillary Clinton is good. Don't be an idiot and make shit up in your mind to assume that's what I'm saying. It's not what the fuck I'm saying. But don't kneecap any and all criticism that's legitimate of Donald Trump because you don't like Hillary Clinton, because that is also stupid. So yes, attack both, be honest about both, be direct and straightforward about both. And when it comes to Trump's economic plan, it is a mess beyond all recognition. Okay, let's move on. We have some unbelievable results here from a new public policy polling survey on Trump supporters. Listen to this. 69% of Trump voters think that if Hillary Clinton wins the election, it will be because it was rigged, to only 16% who think it would be because she got more votes than Trump. Wow. So up front, they're saying it's rigged, period. If he loses, it's rigged. If he wins, obviously not rigged, but if he loses, it's rigged. Okay, understand something, guys. There are over 20 different polling organizations. As of right now, as I'm speaking to you, and this is subject to change, so let's be clear about that. But as of right now, Hillary is up in almost every single poll from almost every single polling organization, save maybe Rasmussen today, which is a conservative-leaning polling organization. Is your argument that every single polling organization has Hillary plants in there that are rigging it for her? Now, by the way, don't get me wrong. I'm not one of the people who says nothing has ever been rigged ever and they never tipped the scale in any way. That's demonstrably not true. Look what they did to Bernie Sanders. The DNC did tip the scale in favor of Hillary Clinton and they were against Bernie Sanders, and that's been proven. So it's not inconceivable that some people in some positions try that against whoever the Republican nominee may be, and in this case it's Donald Trump. But the idea that by definition we already know it's going to be rigged, and we already know that any evidence that points in that direction is not accurate, well, that's just incredibly stupid. Really, all the different polling organizations, all of them, say, you know what, let's all bias this in favor of Hillary Clinton. That's utterly ridiculous. And this is Mitt Romney-level conspiracy theory. Remember that? Mitt Romney, going into the election, Nate Silver had it at, I think, about 90% that Obama was going to win. People in the Romney campaign thought Mitt Romney was going to win, even though, again, out of the over 20 different polling organizations, Obama was up in all of them except maybe two. So it was overwhelming that Obama was likely to win. But the Romney people thought they were a favorite. Why? Because they were living with their head up their asses. And they are internal polling is better than anything else anybody's ever done, even though they do it more scientifically and more accurately. Well, we saw what happened. All the idiots, Larry Kudlow, who said Mitt Romney's going to win in a landslide, fucking Dick Morris, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, all these people, oh, Romney's going to win, I know. They were exposed for the morons they are. Now you have the same thing going on with Donald Trump. Now, again, this is subject to change, and when it changes, I'll be the first one to say it. For a while, I said Donald Trump was the favorite. As of right now, he is not the favorite, and it's not because they rigged it. It's because she's actually up because he's fucking imploding. So, and understand, I don't go as far as some people. So Nate Silver right now says 87% chance Hillary wins. I don't agree with that. But as of right now, is it like a 65% chance Hillary wins? Yeah. Maybe even a 70% chance? Yeah. Because he's been going down, 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 and she's been going up, 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 up. So, and it's not because all over 20 different polling organizations are rigged. It's because that's actually what's happening. But they say only 16% of Trump voters say if she wins, it's because she actually won. So only 16% if Hillary wins will say, you know what, that result is legit. That's scary, man, because that means the overwhelming majority. Well, actually, yeah, overwhelming majority, 69%, are questioning the validity of the election before it even happened and when all the evidence is suggesting that if there's a straight-up election, she will win right now. Okay, so just think about that for a second, how crazy that is. If he wins, they think everything's fair and square. If he loses, no matter what, if he loses, it was 100% rigged. See, you need evidence in order to make that claim. In the case of Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primary, when the DNC was in the driver's seat, there was evidence. So we could talk about how they tipped the scale for Hillary Clinton. There's not evidence yet here. There's none. There's none. Okay. Let me give you more. More specifically, 40% of Trump voters think that Acorn, which hasn't existed in years, will steal the election for Clinton. They're on Neptune. They have permanent verbal diarrhea about the world. There isn't a coherent thought that goes into their minds ever, ever. You're gonna be that confident about this claim that you're going to say it to a pollster who you know is taking down what you say. 40% of you are going to go, yeah, Acorn is going to steal it. Acorn literally hasn't existed in years. In years! It wasn't even around the fucking last election. The fuck is wrong with you? The facts are irrelevant. Data, information is irrelevant. I got a feeling in my gut, and Donald Trump is the way to go, and if he loses, let me tell you right now, And it's because he actually lost, it's because it was stolen. And goddamn Acorn's doing it. These are the same fucking people, you know it, I know it, who think Obama is a Marxist Kenyan Muslim. These are the same people who call Obama a Muslim as they attack him for going to Reverend Wright's church. Which is it? Is he going to a reverend? Is he Jin or is he Muslim? I don't know. I'm just going to call him everything. I think he's an atheist Muslim Christian is what he is. And I don't like him none. 40% of Trump voters are out to lunch, which is another reason why it's so scary that Trump just said yesterday. You know, maybe the Second Amendment people will take care of Hillary. I don't know. Dude, don't say that. Your followers are already proving that many of them are on a level of stupidity that I thought previously unattainable. So if you say that, you know, are there some people who are loose cannons that may be too literal with it and may go in the wrong direction and may further threaten violence or take action? Of course it can happen. You know it can happen. I know it can happen. So, God, look at where we're at, man. Trump has riled up some of the dumbest people in the fucking country. 40% of them! Yeah, Acorn's going to steal it. Acorn doesn't exist, you idiots! Do you do any research? Do you care about anything? It's all about the gut. And my feelings done tell me, and these are the same fucking people who accuse liberals. Oh, pussy liberals. Oh, my God, the liberals, they're bleeding heart liberal. All they do is think with their heart and not with their head. And we're the party of harsh truths, us Republicans. 40% of Trump supporters think an organization which does not exist will steal the election for Hillary Clinton. Tell me again about the party of harsh truths. My ass cheeks are the party of harsh truths. And then, finally, let me give you some final information here. Even though Trump ended up admitting it didn't exist, 47% of his voters say they saw the video of Iran collecting $400 million from the United States, to only 46 who say they didn't see the video. Even 25% of Clinton voters claim to have seen the non-existent video. Okay, so this is, this actually explains to you what happens when you say something super confidently and you repeat it over and over. So Trump had said so many times, I saw the video, the Iran deal, terrible. It was terrible. You saw that we were giving them $400 million in Iran. Okay, no, that video doesn't exist. The video you're referring to was in Geneva, and there was no exchange of money. What was happening was Iran was releasing their hostages to us. So in other words, you flipped the meaning exactly on its head. Iran was releasing our hostages, which is good for us, and it was happening in Geneva. And in your mind, you flipped it to, we are giving them $400 million in Iran. You just made it up. It's totally made up. And you said it for a while so confidently and repeated it so often that 47% of his voters were like, I saw it too. I done saw it too, man. But you going to question my integrity? Yeah, bitch. That's what I'm doing. I'm questioning your integrity. Your dear leader said some stupid shit, and you fell in line because you view him as your dear leader. Anything Daddy Trump says is right by definition, so Daddy Trump done said there's a video, except there's not a fucking video. There's not a video. Even convinced 25% of Clinton voters, I saw it too. Now, eventually, even when he said, oh, okay, that video doesn't exist, he only said that once, and he said it quickly, and then, okay, everything's over, no harm, no foul. Except there still is harm and foul, because he said it existed 8 times, 9 times. He said it didn't exist once real quick and then moved on. And then everybody got the original message, didn't get the correction, and then now still 47% of his voters are like, yeah, no, it exists. I have a hunch, even if you told them, well, they kind of admitted it didn't at this point. He's like, nope, I saw it. I would imagine a lot of them would say that. The truth is irrelevant to these people. This is deeply, deeply troubling, man. So there actually is a political lesson to take away from this, though, which is if you say something and you are confident and you repeat it over and over and over, people will believe it no matter what the fuck it is. And unfortunately, we have cheap idiot demagogues who use that tactic. And the Democrats, when there are Democrats who are actually progressive and right, very few of them know, oh, this is how I get my message out. They're usually nuanced and wonky, and they don't repeat things. Okay, let's say this. The only person who really does it well is probably Bernie Sanders. But that's the way you get your message out, and that's the way you get people to go, duh, when you say things. We need universal health care. We're the only modern nation that doesn't have it. Duh. You need that to be the reaction. But the Democrats rarely use these tricks because they're not that great on policy, because many of them are centrist and corporatist, and they don't know proper marketing. Trump, even in his stupidity, knows proper marketing because he just keeps repeating himself, even when he's fucking dead wrong, to the point where 50% of his followers are like, I saw it even though it doesn't exist. So terrifying, terrifying numbers here from public policy polling about Trump supporters. Okay. Got to take a break when we come back. Who's the most popular political figure in the United States of America? Wait for it. We'll be right back.
Thank you. All right, baby, a lot more to get to. Let's do it.
I have some new polling results here on the popularity of certain political figures. This is from Hart Research Associates, and there are some important findings, if you ask me. So, first, let's go to the least liked politicians in the country. Fourth from dead last, fourth from the bottom, is Hillary Clinton. You have 37% have a positive view, 53% have a negative view, which means she's underwater 16 points. Disaster. All right, third from the bottom is the Republican Party, the entire party. So I guess they also threw in here. By the way, these aren't just, like, politicians. Like I said, it's political figures, so it's some politicians, some people who are not politicians but are known through politics. And also they threw in the parties here as well. So the Republican Party, 27% have a favorable view, 51% have a negative view, which means they're down 24%. They're negative 24. Then you have, second from dead last, Ted Cruz. Of course, Ted Cruz. 22% have a positive view, 53% have a negative view, which means he's negative 31. And dead last in the country, hope you're ready, Donald Trump is the most disliked. 28% have a positive view, 61% have a negative view. He is negative 33. Good googly moogly. So those are the least liked. Now, there's a bunch in the middle. We won't waste our time going through those. But let me give you the most liked. So number five on the list, President Obama. 50% have a positive view, 40% have a negative view, which means he's plus 10 points. Now, understand something, guys. I think this is actually a bigger achievement than people give credit for, because historically, at this point in a presidency, when a president's been in there for as long as Obama has, they're almost universally disliked. Like, you get fatigued, you get tired of it. Okay, I don't want to see your stupid face on my TV anymore. I don't want to hear all the stories about what you did and yada yada. But actually, it turns out that when people look at Obama and they compare Obama to Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, an overwhelming majority of Democrats say, I'd rather have a third term of that guy. And apparently when you look at the country overall, ranked much more positively. Again, that's quite an achievement, because usually historically at this point, like Bush's ratings at this point, he had like a fucking 20-something percent of favorability rating. Barack Obama with a 50% rating. That's unbelievable. So that's, I mean, think about it, man. 50%, that's literally half the country. So, and what, about half the country are Democrats, half the country are Republicans. So almost all Democrats, except it's not, I'm sure a lot of independents like him and some Democrats say they don't like him. But anyway, half the country is like, yeah, he's great. And he's been in there for this long. Wow. Even I, you know, I think he's more of a mixed bag than people apparently do. They view him more positively than I do. I think he's a mixed character for reasons we don't need to get into right now. But number four on the list, Khizr Khan. So Khizr Khan, 22% positive, 10% negative, which is a plus 12 percentage points here. That's I'm shocked that's not a little bit better, to be honest, because Khizr Khan is the father of Humayun Khan. Humayun Khan is a soldier who died fighting for the United States. He saved his unit. There was a suicide bomb. He said, stay here, I'll go check it out, make sure everything's okay. He moved towards the bomb. It blew up. He died. All the people in his unit are safe. So he's a hero. Obviously, he gave a speech against Donald Trump at the Democratic Convention, and it seemed like unanimous support from across the board, and even many Republicans were like, hey, asshole Trump, shut the fuck up. This is one person you shouldn't be going after. You shouldn't go after the family. And, of course, Trump did. Number three on the list, Chelsea Clinton. 32% have a positive view, 20 have a negative view, so she's plus 12 as well. And now let's get to the top two. This, I think, is very important. Actually, you know what? Let me skip ahead to one real quick, because you'll see. There's a reason for it. I don't need to get into it. Michelle Obama is number one. 56% have a positive view, 27% have a negative view. That's plus 29. number two on the list, but this is the number one actual politician on the list, Bernie Sanders. Duh. Duh. So 51% positive view, just 29% negative view. He's plus 22. Okay, I have to say it. We told you so. We fucking told you so. This election would be over. This election would be over times infinity if Bernie Sanders was the nominee for the Democrats. Literally the most liked versus the least liked politician in the country. That's literal. That's not hyperbole. Oftentimes I do hyperbole for comedic exaggeration. That's not what I'm doing here. This is literal. The most liked politician in the country versus the least liked politician in the country. Who the fuck do you think is going to win that race? Now, again, you go, well, Kyle, that's very broad, but can we get more specifics here? Because when you go to the specifics, it's not as clear in favor of Bernie Sanders. Yes, it is. So Bernie Sanders, on average, was up like 9 or 10 points on Donald Trump. Some polls had him nationally up 15 percentage points. 15 percentage points. Hillary's up big right now, but she's up about 5 points on average. Bernie Sanders doubled that. And in some polls, like I said, 15. Fucking triple bit. So that's it, man. That's it. And also, most of his support, so the areas where he has the strongest in his favor, a lot of the swing states. You take all of the plus sides of Donald Trump that made him get this far, this populist rhetoric, I'm against TPP, I'm against NAFTA, and all that stuff. Bernie Sanders kneecaps all of that because he's genuinely populist and genuinely against those deals and cares about the people. So what kind of argument can Donald Trump use against Bernie Sanders? He has none. It's a crazy Bernie, personal attack, personal attack, personal attack, and it doesn't land on Bernie Sanders. You know what? The attacks land on Hillary Clinton. Why? Because a lot of the attacks used against Hillary Clinton are actually true. Hey, you were for the Iraq War. What's up with that? That's true. That's fucking true. Hey, you were for the Patriot Act. Not that Trump has said that. I don't even think he knows what the fucking Patriot Act is because he's an idiot. But he can say NAFTA, you know, all those different things. He can't say that against Bernie. Bernie kneecaps all the arguments Trump has, and he's just way more likable. So you have this flailing, insane liar and fake billionaire versus the most honest person in the United States of America who everybody knows cares about the people and would do the right thing. The polls show he's up nationally. He's up in the swing states. He would have crushed this election. It may have been a historic landslide victory. But he went with Hillary Clinton. Now, again, to be fair, Hillary Clinton is up pretty significantly right now. But we've seen two or three other occasions where Trump was actually up on her. So, and it could keep going back and forth. The yo-yo effect will continue, as I've said a million times. So I would rather not have a close election with the fascist buffoon. But, of course, the Democratic Party had to tip the scale in favor of Hillary Clinton, and she coasted off her name recognition and her celebrity status, and here we are. The country can potentially be turned over to Donald Trump because the Democratic Party tipped the scale against Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders ended up losing when he would have won in a landslide. Okay. All right, now, Donald Trump's economic plan. I come back to that for a second here. His tax plan, actually, to be specific here. One of Donald Trump's surrogates went on CNN and defended his tax plan. First, you're going to hear economic analyst Ali Velshi here. Then listen to this incredible response from Trump's guy.
He gets his expenditure increases and his tax decreases. We'll have a budgetary hole of about $9 trillion extra. And Donald Trump says we'll take care of that with economic growth because people will pay less taxes. They'll feel great about the economy. Companies will employ people. That is classic sort of trickle-down economics, which actually hasn't worked over the last 10 or 15 years. So it doesn't – to be able to suggest that growth makes up – for overspending or undertaxing is sort of preposterous and remarkably risky.
Can I respond to that?
Well, I disagree. I think Ali's point kind of looks at the economy as a static model in today's numbers. I think some nonpartisan groups like the Americans for Tax Reform and the Tax Foundation have also analyzed not Donald Trump's plan yet, but the House Republicans' plan, which this seems to be sort of based on, and they say the number is actually a $191 billion deficit, to which they address with some new taxes on imports and some elimination of deductions. So I don't think this is as pie in the sky as Ali is making out to seem. And I think the trickle-down economy economics has actually worked. We have a vice presidential candidate, Mike Pence, who actually used the lower corporate tax rate, lower income tax rate, and saw 150,000 new jobs in Indiana during the time he was governor. I think that's part and parcel to some of his work.
Well, there you have it. Trump's team. Trickle-down economics works. No, it hasn't, and that is painfully, painfully ignorant of the economic history of the United States of America. So first of all, he cites Indiana. Well, Indiana puts it at work, Indiana. No, jackass. Kansas is the exact model of right-wing economics that all of these clowns have been hard for all these years. And what happened in Kansas? It imploded. It's a fucking disaster. Story after story after story. The deficit is through the roof. Job creation is stagnant. You have middle-class people, poor people struggling there. It hasn't worked. It hasn't worked. And as a result of it, what have they had to do? They didn't really have to do it, but they said they did, and they did it anyway. Cut education spending. So bad that the court system in Kansas has ruled the lack of education funding as unconstitutional. They're like, yeah, ooh, you're putting too much of the burden on the kids here and on social services. You got to reinstate the funding. So this is what happens, man. Every time trickle-down economics is tried, it's an absolute disaster. George H.W. Bush, so George W. Bush's daddy, used to call trickle-down economics, he's a Republican, he used to call trickle-down economics voodoo economics. Why? The numbers don't add up. You know what the theory is, right? They say, no, you stupid liberals and people who believe in math don't get it. If you cut tax revenue, somehow the government takes in more money. Wait, what? That makes no sense. So if you cut the money going into the government, then the government gets more money. Magic wand, alakazam, alakazoo, more money, even though we cut money going into the federal government. That makes no sense. Why do they argue that? They say you don't get it because you don't understand economics. Stupid liberals. But what happens is you cut taxes and then you unleash the beast of the economy. And the economy flourishes so great and so well that you end up creating more jobs. People end up making more money. When they make more money, even though you're taxing them at a lower rate, since they're making more money, that lower rate actually brings in more revenue. Boom. So you have more tax revenue going to the government even though you cut taxes. Okay, interesting theory. You know how we test it out? We try it. We tested it out multiple times. Every single time, it turns out the theory is dead wrong. You cut taxes to the government, you cut revenue to the government, they don't get as much money. That's what happens. That's what actually happens. There's another aspect to trickle-down economics, massive deregulation. Trump said in his tax plan, I'm going to freeze all new government regulations. There are no words for how stupid that is. So what happened in the past when we tried these trickle-down tactics? Well, one of the things was the Great Recession. So you cut taxes for the rich, and you massively deregulate, and what happens? Every time throughout history, boom, bust cycles when you do that. Everybody goes, oh, look, everything's taken off, everything is great, this is the answer, let's just deregulate and let fucking bankers and shit run wild. And then eventually, it's all fake growth, and the bubble bursts, and then we have a fucking crash. Every single time in history you've tried it, that's what happens. That was the Great Recession, the subprime mortgage crisis. That was the Great Depression. The Great Depression. Look at the policies we implemented leading up to that in the teens and the 20s. Cut taxes for the rich. Deregulate because Wall Street, they're the smartest guys in the room. Oh, my God, everything's taking off. This easy credit is fantastic. It's great to have no regulations, isn't it? Oh, this is going to last forever. The good times roll. Oh, my God, we just had a depression, and now people are jumping off the top of buildings and trying to kill themselves because it was fake growth and it wasn't real. Every time it was implemented, it's been a disaster. You do know that the places that had a liberal approach to these things largely weathered the Great Recession. How did Canada do? They did better than we did, right? Why? They never deregulated their banks to the same extent we did. So, but again, they don't learn. They don't care.
Yeah, we're going to copy the same Republican orthodoxy that's been tried every time and failed. But Donald Trump is such a maverick. Oh, my God, he's a straight shooter. He's really for the little guy. And he's going to be on the side of the little guy by crashing the economy yet again. Not okay. Not okay. Not okay. Not okay. And his economic people have no fucking clue what they're talking about. Poor economic analyst Ali Velshi there nearly committed suicide after hearing Trump's guy speak. They have no clue what they're talking about, and it's beyond obvious. Okay.
Now let's go to our boy Bernie Sanders. He's in the news today. So we have the biggest non-controversy of the week here. The Hill is reporting that Bernie Sanders and his wife bought a vacation house. Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so. So here's what they say. Quote, Bernie Sanders has purchased a nearly $600,000 summer retreat on Vermont's Champlain Islands. The Vermont newspaper 7 Days reported Monday. The Sanders' new waterfront home has 4 bedrooms and 500 feet on Lake Champlain beachfront, 7 Days reported. The town of North Hero has fewer than 1,000 residents, according to the 2010 U.S. Census. The Sanders family also owns a row house on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and a house in Burlington, Vermont. The residence in Burlington is currently valued at $321,900, according to city property records. So as a result of this, the response from many deeply, deeply silly people who like to play gotcha politics is, nah! Ha! Yes! We got him! Bernie Sanders goes on vacation sometimes! Yes! Yes! Yeah. And? He bought a house. He bought a fucking vacation house. Gah, we got him. No, what the fuck are you talking? What do you mean you got him? Who on the left has argued save maybe 7 people at various points, and people who are authoritarian leftists, like maybe some strains of communism, who has argued, you know, I'm against vacation houses. We must mandate by law you only get 1 residence. That's it. Who the fuck said that? Who the fuck said that? Nobody said that. What are you saying? What does that mean? The idea that we're like, oh, it's hypocrisy. He bought a vacation house. Okay, first of all, he is literally one of the poorest members of Congress. You know how much money he made in 2014? About $200,000. Now, that's a decent amount of money, right? But that's one of the poorest in the Senate. So this idea of him, like, oh, see, just another typical greedy asshole. And furthermore, a lot of the articles left out this fact. But you know where they got the money to pay for this house? Jane's parents, Jane, his wife, her parents passed away, and they left their house to Bernie and Jane. And they took that money. They sold the house, took that money, and bought a vacation house. Like, how does anybody think this is a story? Somebody tweeted this at me yesterday, like, you're fucking God Emperor. Look at what he's doing. Look at what he's doing. It's, as he says, he cares about the poor. You're allowed to have a vacation house and give a shit about the poor. In fact, I would argue the liberal philosophy is more along the lines of, we want to give everybody an equal opportunity so that they have a shot at the American dream. So that they have the ability to, yes, purchase a home. Be great if, you know, people can purchase a home. It would be great if at some point, after all these years of hard work and struggle, they also can make enough money to maybe get a vacation home. And $600,000 home, I mean, yeah, that's a lot of money. But comparatively speaking, relatively speaking, look at all the other senators. They got fucking houses like, you know, whatever, multi-million dollar houses. There is no gotcha here. There is no gotcha. This is a guy who wants to go on vacation. This is a guy who got a vacation home with his wife. And nobody in his movement, or very, 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 very few people in his movement, would look at this and go, fucking told you. Fucking told you. Like, what do you expect him to do? Oh, he wants to live in a cardboard box. And again, his fucking home is $321,000. That's what his current home is worth in Burlington. Dude, I'm in New York. I'm in Westchester County in New York. $321,000, you can't even find a house for that little here. So the idea of like, here he goes. A vacation house, $600,000, $321,000 for his Vermont house, and he's got the house that in Washington, which obviously he needs something to stay at there. The dude is roughly 3,612 years old. He's been busting his ass his entire career. He never sold out. If anybody deserves a vacation house, it's fucking Bernie Sanders and Jane Sanders. They've been fighting for the people there all their lives. And this isn't a thing of like, you know, oh, look, in Bernie's platform, Section A, subsection 23, it says, vacation homes should be banned. That's what should happen. No. You can fight for universal health care. You can fight for universal education. You can fight for a living wage. You can fight to end the wars and still believe in the American dream and giving people equal opportunity and trying to buy a house or a vacation house or whatever it is and trying to get ahead. That's the whole idea of America. Bernie Sanders isn't more against that than other politicians. He's actually more for it than other politicians. This isn't egregious. This isn't a 13th home. This isn't over the top. This isn't crazy. This is a normal person living a normal life, but you want to pretend like there's some angle of hypocrisy here because, I don't know, you want him to only live in one place or never take a vacation or think he should live in a meager way or a frugal way. His whole thing is he wants, you know, to have an opportunity for everybody. So living in a fucking tiny shack and wanting to have other people live in a tiny shack would be kind of the opposite of what he's arguing for. Okay. All right, let me go to Roger Ailes. The former CEO of Fox News, Roger Ailes, is in a lot of trouble. So over 20 women have accused him of sexual harassment. And the more information we get, the worse the situation looks. So first there was Gretchen Carlson who told her story. Then eventually even Megyn Kelly came out and was like, yeah, kind of did it to me too. And then Andrea Tantaros came out and said the same. Andrea Tantaros, for those of you who don't know, she's one of the furthest right-wing characters on Fox News. And so over 20 women have come out and like, yeah, okay, yeah, this is what he does. Well, now we learn this from Vanity Fair. Quote, 21st Century Fox has begun discussing a settlement in the Gretchen Carlson lawsuit against Ailes, according to two people familiar with the negotiations. The company is requesting that Ailes, who has denied all Carlson's allegations, fund at least a portion of the settlement, which is expected to reach eight figures. These people said, at issue in the settlement talks is the existence of audio tapes recorded by multiple women in conversation with Ailes, two people familiar with the tapes said. Ailes' lawyers have argued that any negotiation with Carlson should take place in private arbitration, but the specter of a public trial looms. Quote, if they litigate the case, all the tapes will become public directly and through others, this person said. Then you will have a parade of women come in. Nobody wants that. Okay. He's fucked. He's super duper duper fucked. Dude, they got tapes of your ass. So you're probably like, oh my God, an eight-figure fucking settlement? Where'd that come from? Well, that's where it came from. His lawyers called up their lawyers. They're like, hey, buddy, just want to let you know, we got your punk ass on tape. You want to make a deal? Sit down at the table, bitch. At least eight figures, and you got to pay. In other words, Gretchen Carlson is saying, if we're even going to have a conversation here, I'm not just having Fox pay, you know, for what happened. I'm also going to, I want some of that money to come out of his, whatever it was, $40 million severance package, Roger Ailes. Gretchen Carlson put that knife in and twist it. And then also we learn this. Fox paid Lori Loon, a former booker, $3.15 million in a settlement agreement. Some of the information leaked as to what happened that led to her getting this settlement. Ailes is creepy beyond imagination. He, you know, forced some of these women into BDSM scenarios, and it was kind of textbook sexual harassment in some cases, because basically he would lay it out there in not so subtle terms. If you do X, Y will happen. So, you know, if you turn around and let me see your ass, if you let me grab your ass, if we have a sexual relationship, well, then you get ahead. And if they don't play ball, well, then they're demoted. And this happened with, you know, female after female after female host, every single one. Oh, you know, do this, do that. If you do it, you'll get ahead. And there are consistent stories. And some of them, you know, we don't have all the details, but with some of the women, it was worse. So Lori Loon, apparently they took it, you know, further and further and further and further. And he had her doing BDSM. And according to her, she didn't want to do it. And it's a mess. It's a fucking mess. So we'll see what happens here. But if it goes to court and those tapes leak, media circus, media hoopla. Because you're going to have the creepy things that guy probably has said, and it's on tape. He's in a bunch of trouble. And, you know, Roger Ailes, for those of you who don't know, has driven the political conversation in this country for decades. He was the CEO of far-right Fox News, and he controlled the narrative masterfully, honestly. He's a brilliant propagandist, is what he is. And to see him have to step down from that position and be fired, basically, from that position means Fox News is up in the air in terms of how they can steer the ship and who they get to lead it and stuff like that. So his horrific personal life decisions and all the women that he victimized led to this situation where he steps down. And hopefully, I don't know what the end game is here. Does he end up in jail? Usually powerful guys like that, I highly doubt it. But if they have him on tape, good googly moogly. I guess it's a possibility. Does he just pay out giant settlements? I don't know. There are so many women. How could you even pay out so many giant settlements? I don't know. What happens from here? What happens to Fox News? I don't know. But it's a giant mess, and over 20 women are accusing this guy of doing classic, at the very least, sexual harassment. But some of the allegations go beyond that. So we'll wait and see. But there are apparently tapes, and Gretchen Carlson isn't playing. And some of the other women are probably watching this closely, too, and going, we'll see what's about to happen to see what direction we go. So buckle up. It's going to be a wild ride. Okay, final story of the day. SciPost has a doozy of a story for us today, and it allows me to obnoxiously proclaim, I told you so. So they report here, some male college students who have negative attitudes towards gay men show an unconscious bias, in favor of homosexual imagery, according to new research. The findings published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine suggest there can be a discrepancy between unconscious impulsive attractions and conscious reflective attitudes about sexuality. Some men who hold negative attitudes about gay people show a higher interest in homosexual activities than their less anti-gay counterparts, according to the study. Boris Chevel of the University of Geneva in Switzerland, the lead author of the study, told SciPost it is currently hard to tell how big of a role suppressed attraction toward same-sex individuals plays in the formation of anti-gay attitudes. He noted that a previous study found about half of anti-gay men became sexually aroused as measured by penile erection when shown erotic homosexual videos. So yet again, I told you so. Now, it's not like I told you so because I've invented the theory or I was the first one to come up with it and guessed that that's the case. No. I had seen other studies that pointed in this direction, and then they started piling up. I saw one, then I saw two, then I saw three. Then you have all the anecdotal stories of this Christian pastor and this Republican politician, and they ended up blowing somebody in a New Jersey Turnpike bathroom and yada, yada. And it all adds up, and you go, oh, I see. And what happens is it's people who are vehemently anti-gay and super vocal about it. They're the ones who are repressing these gay feelings. And also, it usually coincides with coming from a very religious household or just a household that shuns homosexuality. So when you have that mix of factors, it's almost a guarantee that the person in question is gay and they can't admit it to themselves. So they talk about homosexuality as if it's this temptation that we all have to try to fight off. Have you ever noticed that? These are usually the same people who say, it's a choice. Being gay is a choice. They say it because it's a choice to them. They want to blow somebody, but they are fighting it. And like, I don't want to blow, so I got to fight it. I don't want to blow somebody. So it's a choice. I'm choosing not to. They think everybody is struggling with that. Like, straight people are going around. Straight guys are like, God damn it, I want to blow Steve. But no, we don't. We don't feel like that because we're not gay. You're gay and you haven't come to terms with it. So I told you, man. And what's funny is some people respond to me pointing this out and the studies that point this out, and they honestly think it's a silly theory. And they go, yeah, okay. So what, I guess, like, racist white people are secretly black then, huh? No, you idiot, and that's not a cute, clever response. That's not a smart response. But there actually is an explanation for that, too. I would argue that typically the people who are super racist and most vocal about it, they're doing that because of deep insecurities. where, you know, take a Confederate flag waving, goofy, ugly ass white nationalist or white supremacist or KKK guy or just a deep racist, white racist in the South. They probably look at blacks and they go, I'm going to lash out at them and call them inferior because I'm threatened in the sense that, hey, we're coming into a new age and black people have status. You see in the media now, oh, they're cool, they're athletes, they're rap stars and superstars. The president is black. Black people are powerful now and rising in status in society, and we're so insecure about our place in this country that, yeah, we feel threatened by black people doing well. So that's why you say, oh, no, you're inferior, you're bad, you're wrong. So, yeah, there could be an element of deep insecurity there. In the same way that with gay people, it could be repressed gay feelings that leads people to go, oh, no, I ain't gay dog. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't want to suck dick. That'd be awesome. But I don't want to do it. I don't know what you're talking about, man. I don't know what you're talking about. So, yeah, there could be an element of that there, too. But here you have it, man. We were saying it all along. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence. And now various studies have shown this to be the case. Okay, out of time, guys. Love you. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Peace, everyone.